Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune, Pastor Dusty White, and Chris Hummelman of Coram Deo Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about comprehensive sex education.
Guys, before we go there, nice job the past few weeks. Sorry that I missed the podcast.
Yeah, you've been out. We've been holding it down.
You guys killed it. You did a great
Chris
job.
Chris bailed too once, but yeah. We're here.
Apparently, Chris's wife got kidney stones during a podcast.
Kidney
we're
stones,
here.
Yes.
We're here.
Hey.
A little scary, but she's
medical
doing okay.
Issues always trump podcasting.
Yeah, you got to walk out sometimes.
One of our core values as a church is the church must engage culture, not avoid it. And one of the things going on in the city of Omaha right now culturally is the Omaha School Board pondering a change in their sex education curriculum. And so it's been a hot topic in the city over the past few weeks, especially among Christians. And so we wanted to tackle that a little bit and help, especially help our listeners think about how do we engage a topic like this. This is one of the, as a pastor, this is one of the reasons I'm proud of the people of Coram Deo Church is topics like this, man, we do a great job thoughtfully engaging these things and people have good back and forth. There's good conversation. And I think there's a general desire for us to engage meaningfully in our city and helpfully in these kinds of topics. So, Mike, you went to the recent meeting of the school board. It doesn't sound like it was that great of a meeting in many ways. Why don't you describe what happened?
Yeah, so the goal of the meeting was to be an informational meeting for parents and those in the community interested in having a voice into what is being taught to the children going to Omaha's public schools. They were only expecting roughly around 300 people to show up. Over 1,500 people showed up. They had to move us to a room that was large enough, move all their equipment, like their projectors and all that. And then they had to move all the Hispanic-only speaking people to a different room. Like, it was just chaos for an hour. And once we got started, things got hot. I mean, with a topic like this, a lot of passionate people in the room. It wasn't the room that we were in wasn't good for having small group discussions about what we were talking about as far as sex education goes. And so within 45 minutes, it turned into a shouting match between school administrators and people for this curriculum, people against this curriculum. And it was intense.
Did you shout at all? Did you shout?
No.
Good idea. That's good.
I did not.
Let's start here. There's a way the gospel changes how we engage a topic like this.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the Christians who were at this meeting, though we love them, they're part of our extended family, they're aunts and uncles and cousins and second cousins in the faith. There's a tendency to be very alarmist and very shrill and very almost frenetic in a conversation like this. It sounds like some of them sort of were like that.
Yeah, there were a few in the room that were like that, and those are the people that got on camera. Those are the people that got interviewed. The people that were quietly sitting there, honoring their neighbor that they were sitting next to, just quietly walked out of the room once the meeting kind of appeared to be done. You know, it was odd. It was an odd experience for sure.
Well, so one of the things the gospel does is it allows us to not place our hopes in something like the passing or not passing of a sex education bill. And so I think for some Christians that don't have sort of a rest in the gospel, something like this just can get way bigger than it probably should be. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thankful that for those of us who are part of Coram Deo and perhaps others, there's a sense of being able to be there, be respectful, have a voice, make an appearance, speak meaningfully, but not yell and argue.
Not make a scene.
Yell at administrators and whatnot.
Yeah.
I kind of want to think through, guys, the what, the why, and the how of engaging an issue like this. We just talked a little bit about the how of like there's a need for us as Christians to be respectful, and the gospel should make us love our neighbor. And even if we vehemently disagree with our neighbor, there should be a generosity and a respect and a deference and an honor that comes from us because we're trying to love them as Christ has loved us. The how or the why, some people would ask, well, why should we even care about this. Like, yeah. you know, whatever. The public schools are going to do what they're going to do. Yeah, we send our kids there. We know the school's not going to teach our kids about sex the way we would. So why fight about it, argue about it? Let's just mm-hmm. do our job as parents and, you know, not even get invested in something like this. And Mike, before we turn the microphones on, you were saying that one of the reasons that we need to meaningfully engage is because as Christians living in a city, our concern is not only for our kids, but for the kids in our neighborhood, the kids yeah. in our schools, the kids down the street. What are they getting taught? And how do we love them mm-hmm. by helping make sure that they're getting taught in meaningful ways about something as important as human sexuality? So mm-hmm. there is sort of a love your neighbor aspect to even why something like this should matter to us and why we should be willing to think it through and get engaged and involved. Mm-hmm. Then there's a what, which is, you know, what should we think about this?
Yeah.
What should our position be on an issue like this? And Mike, you've got the proposed new curriculum in front of you, or the changes, and there are some concerning things. You know, the teaching to kids of alternate family structures, gender identity, abortive forms of birth control. None of these things is without ethical implication. And so probably part of the challenge for us as Christians is to say, and this goes back to sort of some foundational philosophical convictions about what education is. Education is not neutral. You can't talk about something like sex without implying or assuming some sort of ethical framework for that. And as much as the public schools want to say, we're just going to teach the information, well, no one just teaches the information, right? Now, teachers are going to do the best they can. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be a teacher in fourth grade or eighth grade trying to teach kids about. I mean, you know, I remember I was in sixth grade in the public schools in Millard and my teacher didn't enjoy it any more than we did. I mean, it was just awkward for him. You know, he's like, I got all these sixth grade boys and I'm telling them about ejaculation. And it's just awkward. You know, it's a tense moment. So I don't envy anyone that has to teach this subject in a school. But there is this question of, because education is not neutral, that's part of, I think, what our meaningful contribution to the conversation here can be, is to say, hey, these are ethical issues, whether we think they are or not. And so you can't pretend that we can just inform kids about condoms and about birth control and about gender identity in a sort of unbiased, neutral, hanging out here, just giving the facts, ma'am, kind of a way, mm-hmm. because that's not actually reality. Mm-hmm. Is it the school's job, Chris, to teach about sex for families who won't do it? That's the argument that many thoughtful people are making, is, look, yes, we want this to be a conversation within families. Some families just won't have it. So the school needs to, for the sake of public health, for the sake of, you know, trying to ensure a society where there aren't things like STDs running rampant. And, you know, so there's a pragmatic argument there that I think is compelling to many people.
You want my simple answer?
Yes. Or your complex answer.
My complex? No. I think this should be taught, if we're going to think in the public sphere, should be done by public health organizations, not in the school. There's my simple answer.
So you should send your, so just to understand, you should send your kid to school and then to learn about reading, writing, and arithmetic,
mm-hmm.
and then somewhere else to learn about biology and sexuality.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, biology is part of science class.
Sure.
But yeah, sexuality, but the extension probably shouldn't be.
I'm public school right here. That's why I included.
All right, so Mike, you're a parent who has kids in this system.
Yep.
So this is affecting what your kids are going to learn at some point in their school career.
Yeah.
What are the concerns for you as a parent? Just as you think about, you know, you're obviously going to engage this as a Christian dad. So it doesn't matter what your kids get taught at school. You're going to give them a filter for how to understand life at home. And so for other parents who are listening and wondering, man, how should I think about this kind of thing in a public school setting, and how concerned should I be or not be about some of these changes? What's your instinct right now?
Yeah. So, thankfully OPS is going to allow parents of elementary school age kids to opt in their kids to this, these classes. And if they're in high school, opt them out. So parents have the option to put their kids in or out of these classes. So,
which is good. It's good that they would honor parental choice.
It's great. What concerns me as a parent is me and my wife, we've already started sex ed, if you will, in our home with our 4, 5, and 6-year-old when they were those ages. And so for age appropriate, you know, we did that. So I feel like we're ahead of the curve already. But what concerns me is if the majority of kids are taking these classes and being given this information and taught this subject and the, you know, these new standards of sexuality that OPS is suggesting, that's going to create a culture in the public schools that, I don't know this as a fact, but I can guess and I can kind of look down the road and see that that's not going to be a healthy culture for kids to learn and grow in. It's going to be pretty distorted and perverted culture that we're going to be creating for our kids if, fourth graders, fifth graders, sixth graders are learning these things and having these options given to them. You know, like you said, education isn't morally neutral. And so they're going to be taught things that we're going to have to unteach every day, you know, and parents are going to have to confront those things in the home if they don't want to see those things take long-term effect on their kids.
So does this leave parents in a position of what are you willing to tolerate? I mean, in one sense, you could say as a parent, well, I don't want my kids exposed to this. So I'm just going to pull them out.
Right.
Not everybody has that option and maybe not everybody wants to go that extreme, mm-hmm. but if you're not going to, does this leave them in this sort of, hey, look, the ship has sailed culturally. Mm. You're not going to reverse course. You're not going to all of a sudden get abstinence education held up at equal footing. Mm-hmm. So is this, if you were sort of counseling a parent in a situation kind of like that you're in with kids in the public school and they're really torn up about this, but pulling their kid out of public school isn't an option. Mm-hmm. How would you kind of help them navigate that tension that they're feeling, that angst, that concern?
Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to what, you know, you said, Bob, like we worship a sovereign God. And so God is bigger than what's being taught in school. At the end of the day, our kids are going to be okay because God is sovereign. But I'd say just each situation is going to be different. Like each parent, you know, single moms are going to have to keep their kids in school for a different reason than, you know, a mom and a dad are going to have to keep their kids in school for different reasons. So I don't know, man. It's not an easy, it's a very complex situation.
There's an opportunity. There's a unique opportunity for mission here, I think, in this regard. I remember when my parents, when I was growing up in the Millard Public Schools, and like I said, sixth grade was when this topic came on the radar in the school system. My parents had the opportunity to opt me out. I remember them sitting me down at the dinner table because they were ahead of the game. They'd been teaching me this stuff in age-appropriate ways. And so they just said, hey, look, your school's about to do this. You're going to hear different things than what we've taught you. Mm-hmm. We want you to feel free to engage with your teachers on those things. We want you to have conviction and courage. And, you know, so like there was an opportunity then as a student for me to raise my hand and go, hang on, what about abstinence? Or, you know, what about, you right? So I think parents can actually equip their kids to be thoughtful in that. Possibly.
Yeah.
That doesn't remove all the sort of nuances of how this creates challenges for Christian parents. But I think there is a chance here that that we can help our kids. If we're building a good, robust culture in the home where sexuality is understood biblically and seen in light of God's design, you know, putting a condom on a banana isn't going to make your kid change his mind about what's right and wrong when it comes to sex.
Yeah, and I think along with that, this is in some ways, this is just a drop in a giant ocean of sexuality in our culture. Mm-hmm. So this is not, more likely, this is not going to be the thing. If anything that your kid, any messages your kids are getting that's going to warp their view of sex, it's not this class. It's media. It's other things that they're engaging in the world outside of that. So in some ways, while this doesn't mean we should just, you know, be indifferent to this being taught, I think we do need to keep some of the alarmism in perspective of like, okay, this isn't the tipping point. This isn't going to, you know, skewer kids one way or another.
Yeah.
So I think that's a helpful piece of perspective too.
What about the idea though that our public schools are going to be petri dishes for like more over sexualization? Mm-hmm. Like you don't have to watch more than a quarter of college football on Saturday to be sexualized in what you see on commercials. And so if this is being talked about over and over and over again, Monday through Friday in a classroom, like condensed amongst kids who just are unruly and undisciplined, like that does scare me. That does alarm me. I'm not going to stand up in a meeting and start shouting about it, but as a parent, when I sit and think about it, like that scares me for our city.
That's a citywide huge problem.
Yeah.
It's a huge problem. And, you know, this is a place where I think parents, Christian parents, need to be absolutely proactive. Here's the beautiful thing about this. Regardless of the fact that the meeting maybe wasn't, you know, didn't display the best side of Christians,
yeah.
Christian parents are the ones who care most about this. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the average public school, there's going to be half the kids whose parents just don't care. The ones who actually want to be engaged, involved, hey, teacher, what are you going to teach my kid? How are you going to do it? What are you going to say about things like abstinence? How are you going to teach about birth control? Christian parents have a chance here to assertively engage teachers on those questions, mm-hmm. which I think could open up opportunities for us, even if this curriculum gets passed, to just shape on the other side. How does it get taught? How, you know, what alternate perspectives are given in the class? Can I come in as a dad and talk about how we lead in our family differently, or my convictions about sexuality, or, you know, like, there might be all kinds of opportunities here for parents to be assertive. So that doesn't remove the danger and the problem of it, Mike. I agree, but I'm just saying, I think this is a place where probably Christians need to be more. If your kids are in the public school system, you need to be very proactive as a parent in, you know, creating dialogue with teachers and administrators.
Would you say that's the best they could hope for? I guess a question in my mind, and I don't have a dog in this fight at this point, but question in my mind, what is trying to set expectations for Christians? Like, is there something we can kind of point to and say, okay, where we are culturally, this might be the best you could hope for, in the sense that, hey, this is probably going to get passed, and so it's on you to thoughtfully engage? Or is there any sort of expectation of actually shifting content, shifting what's getting taught? How should we think about expectation?
Sounds like the form you have, Mike, is them inviting to give feedback, right?
Right.
We may have some opportunity to shift content.
Yeah, you can go to OPS's website. They have a form, a community parent input form that you can download. And I believe you have to get it mailed back in before January. But it just gives you the opportunity to look at all the changes that are going to be made. And you can mark whether you agree or disagree, or whether you're neutral on a topic, and you can even give comments or suggestions. So,
can you read that definition of a family? Because it'd be good to highlight a few of the things that are obviously concerning about this.
Yeah, so they also have a human growth and development frequently asked questions sheet that you can get online as well. One of the questions is, how will the school district redefine what we call families? And it says, a family will be defined by saying there are many different types of families and they serve many functions such as love and affection, education, economic support, protection, guidance, and socialization.
So you can see that that's a thinly veiled definition of a family that does not include a mom and a dad.
Yeah, right. There's
or
no,
two opposite
you don't even
sex
need
partners.
A male or a female in there.
Right.
Right. The other one is, what does the majority of the human growth and development content standards currently cover? The first sentence in this answer is, much of the current curriculum teaches students to make wise decisions using a decision-making process. And so my question there as a parent is, what's your definition of wise, and what decisions are we suggesting are, you know, options?
Yeah, which is assuming that your kid knows how to make a wise decision, especially in seventh grade when they're being introduced to all kinds of topics about sexual orientation and sexual decisions. Mm-hmm. And then it also assumes that they know how to make a wise decision around the morning after pill and abortive contraceptives and, you know, things like that. You know, one of the things, this is such a huge topic. At the same time, it's a drop in the bucket, Chris, to your point. But one of the things that we're also not even touching on, and I wasn't at the meeting, so I'd be curious to know, like, what the ramifications to this do in our culture and in our society holistically, like just beyond sexuality. So if you have a bunch of teenagers running around a little bit more educated, what's that doing to their emotional life? All the ramifications, talking holistically here, not even just about, even if you just peel back the onion a little bit beyond sexuality, mm-hmm. we have all kinds of, you know, things going on because of sex. So education isn't going to stop that, you know?
Well, there are obviously ethical concerns and questions here. And I think, Mike, as parents continue to engage this topic, that's the thing I'd want to keep bringing up is like, hey, there's no value neutral way to teach about sex. And so let's acknowledge that. Chris, you mentioned maybe one of the things we should be angling for or pressing for is, can we get equal time for an abstinence model versus a, you know, I'm fine with a teacher in the public school saying, hey kids, you should all have sex and wear condoms and don't get STDs. And, you know, like, fine. As long as you're also going to say, and there, you could also abstain from sex entirely until you're married. And many people do that. And it's very fulfilling. You know, like, to your point, Chris, the culture's not going to do a huge right turn tomorrow and embrace a biblical view of sexuality. But I think to your point, Dusty, it would be nice if we could say, can students hear both sides of the story? Can they hear ethically, but you know, a different viewpoint that says there is an ethical boundary around sexuality that matters. So I'd like to encourage parents to sort of urge for that and press for that as you give feedback on this content.
Yeah. And that might be strategically our best move in the sense that not so much pushing against and trying to prevent something from being taught, because the harder we push on that, the more likely there's going to be backlash. But maybe it's just, hey, okay, you want to teach that, but give space for alternate views to come in. And so the push is, this is what we want added. We want this added. We want this added. So we're not going after the other side. And so, I don't know, that might be a wise strategic move for those that have kids in this situation.
The question I think this puts before Christian parents is simply this. Are you teaching worldview to your kids? At 10th grade level, this doesn't concern me as much because high schoolers are naturally skeptical. But at a 4th grade level, it concerns me a lot, because if you're teaching your 10-year-old that they should trust their teachers and listen to what they say, you're not effectively preparing them for what happens when their teacher says things that are ethically wrong. And so I think Christian parents need to be teaching our kids. I mean, I've been teaching my kids since they were little, hey, there's two worldviews, Christian and non-Christian, right? We look at the world through the lens of the Bible, through the lens of God, through the lens of his glory. There's people who deny God and deny his word, and they look at the world through the lens of entirely humanistic perspective, and so they're going to see the world differently. And so I think as parents, we've got to be equipping our kids at a young age to make those distinctions so that they can see how perspectives presented on something like sexuality would be different, and they can feel free to reject them or feel free to question them or feel free to challenge them because they're coming from a different worldview. So that's probably a pressing question here just on the parenting side of it. But on the cultural side of it, I'm thankful again, as I already said, for the ways that some folks from Quorum Deo have thoughtfully and meaningfully engaged this. And I want to encourage you guys to keep up the good work. And especially if you have students in the OPS district, I realize this affects parents in other districts too, because the point is this, you know, if OPS adopts this, other districts will too. So it's not just an OPS issue, but especially at this point, if you have kids in that school district, or you're a teacher or administrator in that district, I hope you'll continue to be proactive on this, because I think it's a good way for us to meaningfully engage, and as you said, Mike, hopefully strike a different tone from some of the people who have engaged in a not so helpful way.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and missions. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. Please join the conversation by tweeting us @QuorumDeoOmaha, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday on the Wednesday Conversation.